Welcome back to Punch Drug Nerd, the podcast where three friends, three amigos, three bambinos come together to talk about nerd shit. I'm Luis Gonzalez, I'm in the car, and with me is...
Miguel Sanchez.
And Deadpool.
And today, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about Captain America Civil War as our feature discussion. And then we're going to do some news before that, and then we're going to talk about what we're into, right? We're doing Captain America Civil War?
That's right, yeah, Captain America Civil War 2.
No, I'm just fucking around, y'all. We're going to talk about Civil War, Alex Garland's Civil War, a dark look into the future where Cameron Diaz and... No.
Wait.
That's it. Wait. Kirsten Dunst.
Kirsten Dunst? Where Kirsten Dunst and her husband are up to shenanigans. But before we talk about Civil War, we're going to talk about the news. And one of the big things that are popping in the news, maybe you missed it, maybe you didn't. Deadpool and Wolverine are coming out with custom-made buckets. So if you thought the Dune buckets were good enough, well, guess what? We got some Deadpool Wolverine buckets that are going to push the boundary even more.
Yeah, you can literally fuck their mouth with this one.
There's no reveal yet. These are all like prototypes. Those are actual images.
Ed just got really sad.
That was artist rendition.
Popcorn buckets, man. Like. They're so hot right now. You know what I mean?
Dune started something new. Now everybody is.
I don't think we need fuckable popcorn buckets for every movie. You know what I mean? Deadpool and Wolverine doing it like it's like a ha ha. That makes sense. You know,
it would. Yeah, I guess it does.
It would be interesting
to see what different movies do with that. Like, what would be the Civil War bucket? What would be
a camera? It would be a camera, like a Nikon camera.
And you shove your dick in the lens.
Would it be like a flagpole where you can like use that?
Hey, put that flagpole away, partner. You're driving, okay?
You know what I'm saying? So we don't know what the Deadpool Wolverine buckets look like. It's going to be something gross. I think Kevin Feige already saw them, and he says they're pretty, quote-unquote, lewd. We'll just stay tuned. You know, when they pop up, you'll see them in our stories. We'll definitely get them. And if there's a collection, I'll get both of them. But that's it about those popcorns. Let's talk about CinemaCon.
I'm sorry, Luis. I don't mean to stomp all over you. Can we talk about one thing that we did see this last week? At whatever con they were... promoting the Deadpool Wolverine with the cups, the movie cups, and they showed Hugh Jackman in the Wolverine mask on the cup.
I didn't see that.
Ed, you know what I'm talking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess you could say it was Hugh Jackman. I mean, it looked very.
It didn't look official, but it was. You know, like I don't know.
I mean, just like our first bit of news, it just sounds fake. I guess.
It does. It did, right?
Yeah.
So the picture was fake. It's actually going to happen, Ed. The news isn't fake. Saw was fake.
Fake news. Okay. So it was fake. If it's not exactly how the bucket is, then it's not.
Well, they wanted it's Instagram. It's a visual media. People need to see something. They couldn't just write the words bucket coming, you know?
So let's speculate on the bucket.
It could be a bucket coming. It could be also.
There you go. Get real meta with it.
I want the clip. I want the clip just to be that 4 seconds of Luis saying a bucket coming. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and mark that for later. All right. Well, anyway, sorry. Cinema. Luis, take it away.
CinemaCon, it came out and there were a lot of like, you know, reveals. Like they showed a long trailer for Furiosa. They showed 10 minutes or whatever of Gladiator. They showed 30 minutes of Inside Out. I'm not here to talk about movies that we already know are coming out. I want to talk about movies that were announced. And Paramount was one of the big hitters that announced just a shit ton of movies. They are the ones who are like, we got a lot coming. Did you guys see any of them? These announcements?
Yeah.
Stuck out to you before I list? Okay, well, fine. So they're coming out with a new... What's up? Go ahead, Miguel.
If it's still Paramount, it's the one that I'm like the most excited for was this R-rated... R-rated Paw Patrol 3. I'm like, what the fuck are those dogs going to do this time?
Can't wait for the bucket.
I hope they fucking eat Ryder because he's an asshole.
whoa. This is PG podcast. Okay? Sorry, my bad. We don't want anybody to eat anything.
I saw an R-rated Ronin, the last Ronin. You know what I mean? Is that what it's called?
The Ninja Turtles.
The Ninja Turtles. It's that comic run brought to life. I know they were also talking about some studios making a video game adaptation of that storyline. I want to say I'm here for it. I'm in the middle of reading that right now, and I'm all about this storyline. So I want to see that movie.
I've been talking about doing it live action.
I'm pretty sure I read live action, R-rated live action Ronin.
That's exciting. Yeah.
Could be fun.
They're taking chances. I like it because they also are doing the sequel for Mutant Mayhem, which will feature Shredder. But they're also going to be able to do this R-rated Ninja Turtle movie, which is, they're in like the post-apocalyptic world. Is that what happens?
Yeah, and it's all of the turtles have been killed. It's a really great premise. All of the turtles minus one of them have been killed, and you start the story not knowing which one is still alive because he has all of the weapons from his dead brothers, and he wears like a black mask and everything like that, and it's revealed later like who he is. And I thought, okay, that's a pretty interesting premise. Like, I would love to play or watch, you know what I mean, a live action version of this. Yeah.
Ninja Turtles minus one Ronin coming soon. Also, Scary Movie is being rebooted. If you're a fan of those scary movies, those are coming back. And in line with that type of comedy, they're also rebooting Naked Gun. So it's really like
very interesting,
sticky.
Interesting point that you're making here. Both of these being reboots of like kind of famous comedy movies. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Particular tone.
Yeah, and like regardless of how you feel about how they stretched them out, and you were like, oh my god, finish it already or whatever, but like, yeah, similar like parody comedy movies and doing reboots, that's, you know, kind of a strong choice. Scary Movie, I guess I'm more familiar with Scary Movie than I am Naked Gun, so I could kind of see that working a little bit more, because think about all of the horror movie studios, you know what I mean, out now. Like there's like a new,
like an
wave.
A24 scary,
like a, exactly,
movie.
Like a new,
like
wave,
Hereditary.
Yeah, that could be, yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, actually.
So because, it's like, okay, that's like ripe for a new generation, like reinvigoration. Naked Gun, I guess, could do it as well. Do we know who's going to be in the Naked Gun?
Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson.
See, what? Like,
wait, what are you talking about? Liam Neeson is a Naked Gun?
Yeah.
As who? Naked Gun?
As the guy.
All
right.
This is absolutely real. This has been like going on, like they've been talking about him doing this for the longest time. And I think in the last week they announced that Pamela Anderson had joined the cast.
He makes sense. The duo, I don't know. I mean, maybe I just need to revisit Naked Gun. You know what I mean? But Liam Neeson, I feel like, you know, he does the action movies, but he like every now and then will kind of surprise you with like a stoically funny.
He did that tricks bit on Ted, the Ted movie, where like, I have a question for you. These tricks, if I buy them, will they come after me? You know, like he could play these ridiculous scenarios very straight.
Yeah, he was in Dairy Girls as like the local town police chief kind of thing. And that's a comedy. If you
guys, in the comments below, let us know if you've ever heard of the show Dairy Girls.
I have talked about it so many goddamn times on this show, Miguel, you son of a bitch.
About a group of girls who own a cow, and they're running low on money, so they have to get the dairy out as fast as they can into town.
California.
And they're in Ireland.
California, Ireland. It's a city in Ireland called California.
City, right? Cali Ire.
Okay, what else did I put on the list? Because I can't see in the car.
South Park, a new musical for South Park.
Oh, that's right. They're going to do a South Park musical, or like the creators, I forget. And they're being paired up with someone crazy, random.
Oh, Ed, do you know this?
No, I don't.
At this moment, I've forgotten who it is.
It's a big reveal. He's hot right now. It's Kendrick Lamar.
Oh.
The rapper.
Okay.
He's getting together. I had forgotten about this until you said the musical element. Yeah, like they're getting together, and it's like, I don't know what he's cooking right now, but yeah, everything he puts out, I'm like, yes, please, I'll see more. So, and it could be like a really fun way to zhuzh up South Park. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like South Park, they just had that video game come out recently that was pretty reviewed pretty poorly. And it's let's give, like, I want to say IGN gave them a 3. You know what I mean? It was like, yeah, someone gave them bad. a pretty low.
Is this a South Park musical, or is it from the creators of South Park making a musical?
That's what I'm trying to look it up. That's what I'm trying to figure out, actually.
Right. That's a good question.
We know our stuff on the podcast.
You know what? Welcome to Punch Drunk Nerd, the hard-hitting facts. while we're looking that up, just Luis, you were asking about some other movies. Five Nights at Freddy's is getting a sequel. Previously, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the last Transformer movie, they at the very end of that movie, the G.I. Joe shows up. So
that's right.
They're going to do a G.I. Joe Transformer crossover. So I'm kind of excited about that. Excited is really pulling a lot of weight there.
Whose turn?
You guys, did y'all love Barbie from Mattel? Because
I loved Barbie.
Guess what? Margot Robbie is producing a Monopoly movie.
Oh man. Who's gonna be Mr. Monopoly? Who do we go? Who do we think Mr. Monopoly is gonna be?
Jim Carrey.
This news is old. I see Highlander is on here. That's Henry Cavill, I'm pretty sure. Ed, you're a pretty pretty big fan of the Highlander series.
Not at all.
God fucking damn it, Ed. God fuck it. Ed, I just want you to know, when I scratch my nose and look at you, Riley, that's me being like, Ed, I'm doing a bit.
I knew what you were doing. I knew what you were doing. I decided for everybody's sake I wasn't going to get it.
Highlander, he has a sword, right? I don't know.
He has a sword. I've never watched the original movie, and I've watched the series.
Henry Cavill was quoted saying, like, if you've seen my sword work or whatever, you know what I mean? He's like,
yeah.
Are you a fan of Henry Cavill?
Yeah, I actually really like Henry Cavill. I just, you know, I feel like he just gets unfortunate projects. He's
unfortunate soul.
He wants to do that.
Henry Cavill.
Well,
Warhammer?
No, that new fucking movie he did with
Argyle?
No. Coming out. It's like the Inglorious Bastards ripoff by fucking Guy Ritchie. It's like he leads that band
of Gentlemen of Brighton.
Yeah, that one. I feel like, you know, when people trying to act crazy and all they can think of is to stick out their tongue all the time?
Sure.
You know what I mean? I'm off the chain. I hate it when actors do that, and Henry Cavill does it like at least 3 times in that trailer for that movie.
God.
And I'm just like, Henry, you're so much better than that, man. I don't know. He's just, like Luis said, a poor, unfortunate soul. I don't know if his career will ever properly take off. You know what I mean? God, it's been like over 10 years of this bullshit since Man of Steel, and he's just really not had that juicy role that's really kind of... I mean, I know people will like watch The Witcher and like The Witcher. I guess I'm not...
People do like that.
They do like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But you know what I mean? I just feel like he's stuck in this loop of bullshit.
His like
he
passion
needs, like a proper good film, like a good quality film. Give him like a Christopher Nolan role.
Yes.
You know? Absolutely. I'm into that.
I need, because he can do it. He has the capacity. He just needs the direction.
Nolan, you know, they keep wanting Nolan to do a James Bond movie. They keep wanting Henry Cavill to be James Bond. Ed, you could get your wish, both of them doing that, and James Bond.
When you wish upon a star.
I expected like more reaction out of you on that.
Oh.
These are movies that are coming out soon. One movie you will never see at the light of day is Quentin Tarantino's Movie Critic.
Right.
Apparently.
This is some breaking news tonight. Of course, it'll be late by the time our episode airs. But, I mean, 45 seconds before we hit record, Quentin Tarantino was like, I'm not fucking making that movie anymore.
You guys remember the whole debacle around The Hateful Eight? Yes. Whenever he wrote that script, he did like a, you know, like a
reading,
a table reading, like a public show of it. And then like the script got leaked, or rather the script got leaked first. And then he did that. And then he was like, oh, I'm never going to make this movie. And then he ended up making that movie.
This one's coming. This is like, he's going to be like, I'm going to do my 10th and final film. And then he's going to be like, but you guys, the critic was really good. Let me go ahead and release that one now too.
Yeah.
I think this 10 movie bullshit is exactly that. Like,
well, the critic will end up being a movie within a movie.
Yeah.
But he does. He's been doing that.
You don't think that he's going to completely drop this movie? You think that he's actually going to keep this movie in some way?
I think he's very, I feel like in some capacity, because he has talked about like getting into like writing more books and TV shows and stuff like that. So maybe he's saving it for later and making his movie something a bit more.
It's interesting that you say like a movie within a movie, because I read also that Brad Pitt's role in this was supposed to be his character from his character from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So it's like that could very much be like, oh, this is actually not the movie. It's, you know, an inside.
I wasn't very excited for this movie. I was going to give it a chance, but the fact that he's going to just do something else now has excited me again.
Why?
He already did the Hollywood movie.
Yeah,
and we did his westerns. Kind of like, I just want something.
Look at his track record. He did Django, and then he did Hateful Eight. And I always felt like Hateful Eight was just like him just still kind of playing in that world.
I know.
So it's like maybe Hateful Eight should have been one of those movies he let go too. Like he's just 100%. Like I don't want to get out of this yet. I have something else. But really, it's like you're just kind of overstaying your welcome here.
And if it's his last one, quote unquote last one, then. For sure, like rewrite and make another one. If this is going to be go out with the bang. So, unfortunately, we'll never see, or maybe we'll see the movie critic. But if you're looking for movies to see soon, I have a list of movies that will be coming out soon, right? On that
That's right.
Yeah. You know what? Like one of our favorite movies of the year so far, Dune 2 is coming out. On physical copy May 14th, but you can get it digitally right now.
That's right.
Can't wait to watch later.
Yeah. And then Monkey Man, which you can see in theaters right now, is going to be out April 23rd on digital release. So
I don't know who
next week.
I don't know who wrote this note here. This is very interesting. It's 17 days after its a theatrical release.
If it hasn't made $50 million. And,
apparently Universal has this policy that any movie under $50 million, it gets released ASAP. Exactly. I don't know who added that, but that's interesting. That's a nice little peek behind the curtain.
I added that. I think after the pandemic, they just realized like, listen, it's not worth marketing. It's not worth keeping it in there. I think to keep the flow of like, hey, the excitement.
The talk.
Keep the talk going and flowing. We'll just have it flow right into the premium VODs, the streaming and all that stuff. And so I think they're starting to find a way to trickle things down from like, okay, we're going to be in the movies for 17 days. Then we're going to do premium VODs and then, you know, cheaper VODs and then streaming. And so it kind of trickles its way into it.
That's kind of wild. I don't mean to go on a tangent, so we can move on if we want, but that's incredible. Like there is a middle ground between like the classic release schedule and then like what happened during COVID where HBO was releasing the movie the same day in theaters and on their streaming service.
Yeah.
I think the number 17 is kind of odd just because
it's before it's just under 3 weeks of a new release opening. Say it would leave theaters on a Thursday right before
something else weekend. Can come in.
Exactly. Now,
and I hear what you're saying there, but I just mean like as a viewer, like what if I don't have a chance in the first two weekends to go see this? I thought you were frozen, Ed. I was like, what is that face you're making?
No, I'm just pulling a face at Sarah. Came out of the room. Anyway, sorry.
No, I don't even remember the point I was making. You know what?
There's that what's it called? Stat that came out that I think a third of the people will go to the movie theaters while the rest, the two thirds, will just wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll just wait for it to come on streaming. And so they're just there to, they've seen the numbers. Wow. They're there just to expedite the process. They're like, okay, this trend exists. It's kind of hard to
talk
about
it. Yeah. The more we talk about it, I kind of like it now, actually. Like, yeah. I was sitting there thinking, well, what if I don't have time to go see the movie? But then also, like, I don't have time to go see the movie.
Well, I do think
I do have also, I do have 17 days of patience built up, though.
I do think also, though, it does pose a threat to maybe kind of smaller movies, basically. Well,
that, it's like the final nail in the coffin.
Yeah, because also, like, Universal, you know, they could just easily say, like, ah, we're going to give you, like, this much budget for marketing and stuff like that. So, like, if they're already setting up something to fail just for the sake of, like...
Exactly, budget.
Yeah, and just, like, expediting it to streaming, you know, for the sake of... And I get it, like, you know, putting your movies in theaters, it's, like, a tale as old as time. It's always been, like, you know, high prices to appease the studios and theaters at the same time. But
there's a new narrative going out about how IMAX, like, everything is like the theaters aren't doing well, but the one exhibitionist that is doing well is IMAX.
Yeah.
And they have less than a percentage of the screenings, but they made like 25% or 23% of the of the box office budget intake. I mean, you know, Dune was like, I resaw Dune weeks and weeks after, and it was still full. And I think it's going to go away for a little while, but then it's going to come back. Just
100%.
Those premium formats are kind of the way for the people to come back in.
That's an interesting point, because I was about to say, like, oh, but you got the chance to go see Dune, you know, that many weeks later, but it also made more than $50 million.
Right.
So, like, that's an interesting policy. Yeah. It's like, it's just numbers at that point. Like, if we can't hit this, then we don't need to waste any more.
But
and that's
the
a
same
policy
time,
just
like,
for Universal right now. You know, it's different for every studio.
Sure. But
like
a low
budget drama, say, and I know Universal doesn't usually put out that kind of stuff. You know, Universal is known for its bigger blockbustery movies. But Oppenheimer was like its big movie of last year. But like, you know, smaller movies, like small dramas and stuff like that, that are maybe a budget of 2 to 10 million are only going to make about 2 million opening weekend, and like, you know, if that movie goes on to make maybe 25 million, that's considered a success on that scope, but it's still not making that $50 million mark. So I don't know. It's a moot point. It's happening, but
it's an interesting segue actually to our feature discussion, because A24, known for making very small or like, one, buying small movies, and then also starting to move into making movies. They're starting to make the move into getting to bigger movies that cost more money. And one of those movies was Civil War. You know, it had a bigger budget. They put more into it. And luckily, it did well in the box office. So that was a good gamble. But I know it's like, it's hard where even the distribution company that was indie focus is also now kind of diving into the big budget world. I find that interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, but even on a certain level, like Civil War still feels contained for what you get. Yeah. But you know, it's good. Cool. Like visually, I mean, like they use it to, you know, the most effective way. But yeah, they are really pushing that whole IMAX thing right now. As you guys know, I saw Ex Machina a couple of weeks back in IMAX as a prelude to this. And they showed the first 5 minutes of Civil War. I think I told you that, but
yeah.
So yeah. Now
well,
does
shit.
Everything
I mean,
translate
yeah.
into it? I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
We're talking about Civil War. I think we just jump right into Civil War. Into our featured discussion, there will be spoilers. Also, for the viewers at home, I haven't seen Civil War, but we have to talk about Civil War. Even if you spoil it, I think it won't ruin my experience. I'm ready to go watch this movie this weekend. But I wanted to hear your thoughts. There's some movies where, like, I don't want to hear anything. But this one's like, you know what? I'm okay to hear it. I'm still going to enjoy it, I think.
I'm not gonna lie, Luis. I think you're wrong. I don't think you should even, I don't think you should be here for this. But at the same time, you know, I hope. Well, I think to your point, I do think it is impactful. And if you get a couple things spoiled, hopefully it'll still hit because it is very like edge of
and
your
seat. We can tiptoe around like big moments and stuff like that.
And then I'm almost to my house, so I can convert to my other setup. So during that downtime, you'll be able to like go into spoiler section. Okay, I'm gonna hand it off to y'all, guys. I mean, how was Civil War? Initial thoughts.
Go ahead, Miguel. You've been bursting all weekend.
Yeah. I will say this: Ed got to see it last night before we recorded. I saw it 3 or 4 days ago. It's a little more fresh on his brain, but I wish I would have seen it one more time before this. But it was one of those movies that I immediately, the next 2 or 3 days afterwards, I could not think of anything else. I was having a great time. It was very, one of the things I talked about with Ed, we're talking about the trailer and how Ed thought the trailer was a little spoilery after the fact. And I was telling him like, yeah, it's just like A24 really wanted to push this. We're making an action movie. And so they like really like did this like jam-packed action movie trailer. But when I was watching the movie, I never felt like, oh, this is an action movie. What I felt was like this an impending sense of dread the entire time. I was constantly in anxiety mode. Every time our characters like met a new group of people, there was always the number one question was, are they good? Are they bad? Are we on the same side? Or are we against each other?
What is good? What is bad?
What is good? What is bad? And Ed sent a couple of really cool Reddit links to me, and it was a little more like introspective of the whole thing. I was telling him, I could not really process deeper than a certain point when I was watching it for the first time.
Yeah.
It very much is like, it grabs you by the shoulders and says, you're coming along this journey and fucking buckle up. And I need to see it again to kind of like really like sink my teeth into it more. But my initial reaction was, I mean, my jaw hit the floor like 2 or 3 times during this movie. I had a great time. I saw it in Dolby. Ed saw it in IMAX. I would say like, you know, anything less, I wouldn't, you know, I really commit to this because the sound really did play a big feature in this movie.
Oh, 100%.
You know, there was a lot of like, kind of like ear, like drum shattering, you know what I mean? Sound hitting you at different points. And it really kind of shook you into the violence of what was happening. So I'm sorry, I'm rambling, but my ultimate thought was 2 thumbs up. I had a great time during this movie.
Yeah, hilarious. It was a riot.
In the way that the bear is a comedy.
In the same way the bear is a comedy, it gives you so much anxiety. Yeah. You know, if you didn't laugh, you would cry.
You're like, ha, 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 kill me too.
Everybody was looking at me weird because I was laughing so loud. So yeah, I got to see it in IMAX. Like Miguel said, I think, you know, unless you have 100% faith in just like a typical 2D screening at your local theater, the IMAX for me was it gave it so much weight. And like you were saying, Miguel, those moments, the sound editing in this movie is really good. The gun, you feel the gunshots and the explosions around you. It really kind of immerses you in the situation without being too oppressive, you know, like sure. It throws you in the nitty gritty, but it's not so like, you know, intense where you're disoriented. You can see what's going on.
Yeah.
And the cinema,
it lets you live in it, you know, exactly. I mean? Without taking you across that line to being like, this is uncomfortable.
And true to Alex Garland form, it is very, you know, it is action packed for his, you know, level of filmmaking, but it's very meditative too. Like there are a lot of quiet moments and lingering shots, and you know, it's, and even for a short movie, you know, it kind of, not that it ever felt long, but it draws it out and gives you time to breathe at the right moments. But the rest of the time, yeah, it is really gripping, very intense, very astute to obviously a lot of things right now, but also very clever in not kind of taking sides. It's very vague in its political.
It's very neutral.
Very neutral, but also very much just like, this is what could genuinely happen. Mm-hmm. And when you're holding up a mirror to a country like America, where like one of the main rights of the people is to carry your own guns, it does bring around a lot of scary situations that you are like, oh fuck, I have no idea what's happening. And just like a lot of the characters in the movie, there's one scene where they come across this kind of sniper fight.
You can't see
the other guy shooting. You don't know why they're shooting at each other. The soldiers who are trying to fire back don't know why they're shooting, but they're shooting at us, so we're going to fire back, and somebody's going to die.
That was like one of those really early moments for me where I realized and maybe it's just me, but like I couldn't keep up with like if there was subtle changes in like the uniforms or anything, I didn't catch them.
Right.
Every time they came across someone in the military, I was like, I don't know what side you're on. And I thought that was a really great line where he was like, you know, this guy's trying to kill me and I'm trying to kill him. Like, it really doesn't matter. And I think that's like,
he already killed one of our guys kind of deal.
That,
it only, to your point, Miguel, it only really kind of becomes clear towards the end.
Towards the end, right?
As it's building towards the climax. But that's just like where we're at with the characters. But yeah, as they're traveling across America, it is very, very blurred lines, and that's what kind of keeps you at the edge of your seat the whole time, is idea that just like even the average people, again, armed to the teeth with,
you know, you talk about that, like they go to that one town and they go into the shop or whatever, and then they're like, oh, they're trying on the hats and the dresses and they're being silly and goofy, and the girl at the counter is a little aloof, like she's like, I don't really pay attention. And then like the moment you think like this is like a lull and we kind of breathe for a second. And then like the moment they walk out of that store, you know, the other reporters like, look up, don't make it obvious, but look up. And then there's like snipers all over the roof. You know what I mean?
Cause like nobody is at ease.
No one. They go to the gas station and they go, I just want to get gas. And they're like, we'll fucking kill you just for being here. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
One of the things I took away from this movie in retrospect was this felt like, you know, Saving Private Ryan, which I also watched recently. You know, it's a much bigger movie, a real life war. But the way that they center around that like small ensemble, and every scene is them like coming in contact with like a new character or a new group of characters for like a brief 2-3 minute scene, and then they move on to something else. That's very much what this movie is like for me. It's like there is 3 or 4 main characters, and the world around them colors like everything else, you know?
Right.
But
just like the different temperaments, different mindsets, the different
different
responses, even,
every like, engagement, you get something different,
exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
And I really felt that every scene built upon the last. When we finally get to, I don't know about you, Ed, but like obviously everyone's talking about it, that Jesse Plemons scene is really good. I hope I'm not the only one in this, but it is amazing. You know, he's there for 5 minutes, and the entire time you're like, oh my god, like I need this to be over because I'm so stressed the entire time.
No, 100%. I, you know, it was funny, like, of course, after I got out of the movie, I got home, and the first thing I wanted to do is kind of like catch up on the reviews that I'd been avoiding, and the Reddit thread, obviously the official discussion on there, and the maybe like the first long ass chain of comments is just like basically just talking about Jesse Plemons. And yeah, like you said, he is really only in it for 5 minutes, but like it definitely makes an impression. But
it's also one of those things, like, he's kind of becoming, this sounds like the wrong term, he's becoming like a meme on the internet, and not in like just a funny way, which is also like you're seeing the haha funny memes, but it's like his whole career has become like the one tagline, you know what I mean? It's like the great Jesse Plemons or whatever, like he's coming out, and he doesn't matter how long he's there for, he's gonna like show up and show out.
Yeah.
But everything I've seen of him thus far, including this movie, it's warranted. You know what I mean? The hype is real. He is very good. So
he's reliable. He is just fucking reliable. Allegedly, like, leading up to last weekend, you know, obviously they're doing the premiere, they're discussing all the ins and outs of the movie, and apparently Kirsten Dunst were, like, the actor who was originally supposed to play the soldier that Jesse Plemons plays.
Yes.
Backed out. Yeah. And Kirsten Dunst was just like, well, Jesse will do it. And I feel
I tell you what, true or false, man, that's a story that sells a movie. You know what I mean?
100%. But you also believe it just because they're very just kind of humble actors, you know? I really do want to talk about Kirsten Dunst too, because I thought she was like fantastic in this.
100%.
Like, she is so effortlessly just good. You know what I mean? So natural. You instantly buy this journalist,
this version of her.
Yes, this photographer who is obviously, you know, really good at what she does, but she's a little worn for wear, trying to, you know, had the idealism of journalism, being able to spread the word of, you know, just like terrible things happening elsewhere in the world and to avoid bringing it back home. But then obviously
here it is,
you have this Civil War II in America, and you feel her, you feel her irritations, her frustrations. They're definitely warranted. She, you know, she's kind of thrust into this mentor role for the Jesse character. But at the same time, she's, you know, she's nurturing, she's, you know, critical, but, you know, in a, you know, positive way.
And kind of in an understanding way. Like, I've walked these steps before. Like, 100%. I can tell you how to do this.
And that transition at the end is clear. It's just like she's seeing her younger self in action again. And we get glimpses of that earlier on after the initial explosion. I don't think it's like a huge spoiler to say, but the movie opens to a kind of suicide bombing. And the first, like, her first reaction is to get her and Jesse down, and then the moment the dust starts to settle, she's already up and taking pictures. Yeah,
yes, yes.
And that you know, that contrast to the end of the movie, like, throughout the movie we start to see her let go of that. Like, during that sniper battle we were talking about, she's not even trying to get in the shot. She just kind of starts appreciating all this weird beauty in this very kind of grim environment. And yeah, man, she's just so good, super underappreciated. Like, but, you know, she's up there as far as like national treasure, as far as I'm concerned.
If you think about it, she's been acting for like 30 plus years, you know what I mean? So it's not like she's coming into this role with like trepidation or insecurities. It's like she is showing up. It's like, I know how to play this role today. 100%. No, she's so good. I definitely like this trajectory of her career in the last like 10 years. Like, do you remember when she did Melancholia? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember I was watching one of her, like, it was like one of those GQ interviews or whatever. And she was like, yeah, after Melancholia, like, I started getting offered these types of roles a lot more. And she was being really selective with it. And this is one of those that I could see, like, no, yeah, this was a good choice. I just really appreciate it. I think the whole cast of the main ensemble was really great. There are some kind of like tropey relationship things that you've seen, you know, the mentors, 100%. Like the whatever, but it works because it just kind of feels natural. And it's like, there's a bigger world going on outside of a trope. And you're like, okay, just like,
it works. It's
a useful tool.
Yeah, exactly. It is a way to get across these characters in like almost an unfathomable but totally believable situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna mark that real quick. I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were gonna speak Shakespeare tonight. Okay.
But you know, it's just like something so horrific, and it is one of those things, and why I think, especially, it's, you know, not to get all preachy about it, but it is important, I think, for people, especially of a certain mindset, to see this kind of thing, because it does kind of bring you with those harsh realities. It's a very sobering film to watch, and to see that kind of very realistic and not gratuitous violence happening at, you know, in very
on your doorstep, you know,
very familiar settings, like a lot of these towns that they drive through. You're just like, I've been here. This is every town in America.
One of the things,
and everything that they come across, you 100% believe in that situation, which is what makes this movie so powerful. And again, it's so non-assuming politically that it is literally just saying, like, this is it. This is what it could be. And this is how horrific it could truly be.
It doesn't matter what those pieces are, if they're, you know what I mean? If they're on the game board and they're, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
We're fucked. I agree. Like, we do a lot of road trips and we've traveled, you know what I mean? When we first moved to Colorado, I mean, 6 months later, we did a road trip from Colorado all the way to Florida and back. And it's like going through that Southern belt. Like, I've seen these towns. I've seen these people. And, you know, if I pulled into a gas station in a town there, and what if I had to deal with something like that? You know what I mean? What if it was cranked to 11, 12, 13?
The very real situation, like they say in the movie, is like, any chance we have to get gas, we should take it.
Yeah.
Because that's how desperate that situation would be.
That was also the first moment in the film that I really appreciated, that they were like, we are going to tell you without showing you what's happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes they choose to be very blatant and in front of the camera, like, this is the violence. And sometimes they would pull back and it was just like the next, you know, 15 seconds after the fact or whatever. And you're seeing these characters react to something that you're not quite sure what happened yourself. And then it kind of paints this whole picture. But I loved that scene where she was just like, you know, go stand in front of these like bodies that are hanging, right? That they're still alive. Yeah. You know, go stand in front of them. I want to take your picture. And then, you know, 20 seconds later, the young reporter is having kind of like a panic attack in the car. And I just love that, you know, not everything was blatant, but it was impactful.
Like we were saying earlier, there was some like tropey things to it, but it just felt necessary to the story that they were trying to tell, without it dumbing it down or being sentimental, because it's not. And like some of those comments I sent to you last night, there's a lot more inner context to certain situations. It's not just so cut and dry.
You're gonna want to watch this one a couple different times, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. It's short and it is to the point.
Oh, and I love that.
But it is very, like, very, very dense and layered and complicated.
but it doesn't feel like that. Sometimes you watch one of those really like 3 hour long, like dense
100
movies,
yeah,
and you're like, oh my god, this is a lot to chew on, but this really was like a pretty well-paced movie.
Yeah.
And you're keeping up, but the layers are there, you know?
Yeah. And the ending comes like a fucking storm. Yeah. That maybe that last 5-10 minutes I was like on the edge of my seat.
Yeah.
Just trying to, you know, breathe, you know, normally. And I'm not going to spoil it, but like the credits, just kind of brilliant, like genius, because it's just so fucking real, for lack of a better word. It's just like so real, the whole scenario and how that would play out in real life. It's just kind of crazy, and that's all I'll say. Sorry, I'm kind of like being vague.
I appreciate this. I'm sure our listeners do too. Like, we're trying not to be super spoilery.
Yeah, because
we want Luis to go see this movie.
The more surprises, the better.
Yeah.
If you've seen the trailer, I think you can I don't think there's any spoilers as to where this story gets to by the end of it. But with that said, like, we'll try and withhold information.
This is one of those things where they show you a few things, but when you don't have the context, you know,
no, 100%.
Then it just doesn't feel as impactful. But when you're watching these scenes, you're like, oh, okay, I kind of know where we're going next. I recognize this from the trailer. But then they just like kind of punch you with it, and you're like, okay, I was not quite expecting this impact. I don't know. I think this is one we should watch. I want to go see it again.
I'll probably go see it
this weekend.
Definitely try and see it in IMAX. Try and see it in Dolby. Try and see it in a theater. Like, the just that much more dramatic power the movie's going to hold over you if you give it a chance and see it in theaters. And like we were just saying, it's only an hour and a half. I saw this at 7. I was walking out of that theater at 9. You know what I mean? Like, you got to give time for trailers and all of that. But like, that was a sweet movie night for me. You know what I mean?
No, that's interesting you say that, because I walked out and the sun was still going down. Like, that was, y'all, come on. Oh, that was nice. Nice.
Yeah, there are some majestic ass shots in here. If you thought all of Alex Garland's movies are very beautiful in a way. Like, Men is fucking graphic and horrific, but it's also a very beautiful movie. This is no less. So, like, there's a lot of striking imagery and a lot of, some incredible slow motion. There's that one scene where they're driving through the forest fire in slow-mo on IMAX, guys. That was, like, just awesome to see. I don't know. I mean, I would, of course, see it in Dolby, and I'm not doubting Dolby, but IMAX was very effective in the right moments. That last shot flying over Washington, that helicopter, immense.
I feel like I just said this recently on like the last episode or so, but like, Ed, you have like a true IMAX screen. You know what I mean? Yeah. Luis, I'm sure you guys do too as well. But mine here is like, it is barely bigger than a regular screen. And I saw Godzilla and King Kong on it recently. And I was just like, you know, I don't feel the same impact. For me, in my location, Dolby was the way to go because it was impactful. Like, I felt those colors. I felt those sounds. So that's my only soapbox moment is like, if you can't go see it in IMAX, like, there is a better viewing than just the standard. You know what I mean?
I have a question about the IMAX screening. Was it a 1:4:3 or was it, you know, anamorphic? What was the aspect ratio? Did it fit for IMAX or did it fill the screen of the IMAX?
Okay. No. Shot for IMAX.
It was shot for IMAX.
Maybe not shot with. It wasn't that whole 70 millimeter IMAX.
They were like,
IMAX,
we had IMAX in mind.
Right. Right. No, it did not. It did not fill that whole way. It wasn't doing that cutty jumping.
Oh, it didn't change?
Right. No.
I mean, that's good, right?
Yeah. But again, like I said, very effective. And granted, it is some like intense imagery to see on the big screen, but also that much more immersive.
One of my favorite shots was when they dropped the nuke on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. And then Team America came.
I mean, I believe it. It happened. Yeah. Well, when I go to the movies, I'm expecting to see it.
I'm like trying to think of all the American landmarks. Hang on a second. When that arc in St. Louis was toppled, you know, that bean in Chicago.
The bean in Chicago?
Yeah, the bean, the reflective bean.
Thank you, Luis.
Oh, okay. I do know.
Ed's never been to Chicago.
I've never been to Chicago. I ain't seen no bean. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, no, I'll say this. I'm going to go see this movie again. I'm going to get it the moment it comes out. Like, this was a fun one. Fun. I don't know if that's the right word, but
it's a good cinematic experience. It'll be interesting to see where this movie stands, especially being an election year during award season and stuff like that. Like, I hope it has legs.
See, that's why I super appreciated the fact that it was super neutral. We're not gonna blatantly tell you what side is what and this and that.
It's ambiguous.
It's ambiguous because then any crowd can watch it.
No, 100%. And that, yeah, all the more reason why people should check it out, because it doesn't take a strong stance, but it's just offering a very realistic look at that sort of thing. And
what if the person who disagrees with you had a gun, you know, and was pointing it at you?
Bottom line, when we all start pointing guns at each other,
yeah,
that's when shit's going to get fucking nuts. And but yeah, no, this is really great. The cast, everyone was great. I didn't really have any qualms with any of the cast. I don't know about you, Miguel, but
no, I had a great
time. Yeah, so yeah, Civil War, definitely a must see.
All right,
try and get it up to that 50 million, guys.
I'll see it. I'll aim to see it this weekend, and then I can give my thoughts next week on our what we're into. Speaking of what we're into, let's talk about what we're into. And I know you guys talked about Civil War without me. I think it's only fair that me and Ed now talk about something without you, Miguel. But look, we're not going to get into it. I was just going to give broad strokes.
I've watched it. I'm just not caught up yet. Okay,
That's fine, baby.
That's fine. I think that's good for this discussion. At least you're up to what? You've seen three episodes?
I'm on episode four.
Okay. So there are six episodes.
The video
out now.
Game episode.
The sixth one came out today.
The sixth one came out on Wednesday.
On our recording.
Yeah. And and I just wanted to talk about initial reactions, where everyone was coming from. I came from watching the whole thing and then rolling into 97. Miguel jumped in, Ed jumped in, is jumping back and forth. Thoughts on it. I'm gonna give my thoughts real quick. Let me say this. When they said that intro music, when that X-Men song was coming back, they're like, we gotta put it in there. And it's gotta be the intro. I was like, yes, I'm hyped for that. Let's do this. Ron Wasserman, I think, is the guy's name. He also did the music for Power Rangers, too.
Okay. Classic. Oh,
if you've heard of the Power Rangers theme song, that guitar fucking wails and goes too hard. Same with the original X-Men theme song. That like, you can hear the guitar just wailing and singing and fucking going to the sky. Here I am. Let's go. 97. No. It plays this theme song that sounds like it's coming from a fucking keyboard. And I'm like, where is the energy? Where is the life? No. This seems so dead
so
to me.
Sorry, Luis.
Kind of disappointed by that, especially when they were like, it's going to be the same theme song, and I want that wail. And I didn't get it. I didn't get that guitar just coming in and singing, bringing down the heavens. Outside of that, this show, it took me some time to warm up to it.
Yeah.
I've watched a couple episodes now, and I'm in it. I'm here for it. I think I got locked in around near end of episode two to episode three. Is pretty much the place where I'm like, okay, I'm living here now.
Yeah.
And another thing, I don't like the way that the faces look. I think it looks old and sick. And I think a little bit of these characters look very pale. I'm like, you need to get out in the sun and you look like eye bagged. It's just, I didn't like how it looked.
And this is cartoons. You know what I mean?
These are compared to what I was originally drawn.
What kind of expectations were you going into? Because I've been watching this old.
Well, I watched the originals X-Men. And they had some, like, you know, like fucking.
I know,
like,
but the colors moved at all.
Well, that's fine, I guess. The colors just looked like they were stripped out of life. I was like, you need to get out in the sun. I don't know who was the inker.
I got a little wrinkles
in the eyes here. It's like, it just looked, when they had those zoom ins, it looked like those Ren and Stimpy zoom ins when it's like, you know, the warts and stuff. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I really tried to like get over it. I'm like, okay, this is fine. Everything else, the wide shots, the animation, the way that they move and flow, I'm all for it. You know what I mean? But I'm just talking about those close up faces. They just look a little old and sick to me.
If we're saying negative things, Man, you guys, I don't think X-Men, the cartoon show, is for me, okay?
Yeah, here we go.
Well, we knew that. I was surprised you joined in on 97.
I know. Well, I started because last week, you know, the big episode came out, and they were like, the whole internet was talking about it. And I was like, okay, they're 25, 30 minutes long. I'm like, okay, I can watch three or four of them and get to this big one. And then I got to the fourth one where she's in the video game, okay. And I was like,
okay,
man, I need to pause for a minute. Okay, so hold on.
I think I know why they did the fourth one that way, because of the fifth one. I think they had to create a buffer for the fifth one, because I agree. And watching the first one, I immediately thought of you, Miguel, and I was like, oh no,
he's gonna hate
Miguel's me. Not gonna like this at all.
Because the very first episode,
yeah.
You know why? Let me tell you why. I was in it until the one line of dialogue, and I want to ask if this is something that was, is this like a tagline from the original show?
I think you brought this up already once.
But when he fucking says,
yes,
to me,
he brought this up.
My X-Men.
Yeah,
that was like, kill yourself. You know what I mean?
You said that last time, and yes, that is a thing he says. That is like a phrase. That him and Professor.
I had to be like, okay, Miguel, this is not content for you. Like, this, don't worry about it.
It's okay. You don't like the X-Men? That's fine. This is going to be.
But the thing is I kind of do like the X-Men.
I don't know if you do like the X-Men.
Maybe I don't, though. Maybe I don't, actually. But I liked those movies. I just, like, I don't know if this is my genre.
I didn't like the what's it called?
The original
version of it. The Jennifer J-Law.
Okay, so first,
hang on.
That's a whole. We don't need to get into it. And yeah, you were talking about X-Men 97.
Okay,
97.
Oh, yeah, so that was my interpretation. Now I'm locked in. Miguel's not. Intro music and faces.
Miguel, are you going to try and watch the fifth episode still?
Yeah, because it's a big one. But
I will say
that
fourth episode threw me through a little bit of a loop, because I was like maybe half paying attention at
the
beginning.
You know what, though? Is it's a very like 90s kids Saturday morning cartoon version.
This, you know? This show is very much not of what it was before. You know, this is like a dramatic, more serious tone where, you know, it's not like talking point, go. Like here we're kind of like lingering in moments and we're linger. We'll talk about that movie later. but yeah, I think it really,
like, oh my god, it's on the list.
Yes, it sits with these moments more dramatically, I think, for an adult audience, and that fourth one acts as a buffer and
vibe. I get that, and more so I was just like, I did three episodes and then I started the fourth one.
Did you like the third one though,
all in one?
The whole
baby clone situation, taking the baby I was very like kind of like, whoa, okay, that's a big deal, you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't imagine sending my son, you know what I mean? Like,
my jaw, this apparently it's a storyline, but my jaw dropped. I was like, wait, what's happening? And I didn't know the storyline, because
I have been spoiled a little bit about
okay. I was just like, wait, what? And
then
just, like, did you just say this person was this person, and then we went through this whole roundabout way? I was pulled and enthralled.
The baby aspect, though, I had that spoiled for me. Like, the baby goes to the future, and it's like, oh, okay, I see now what they're doing with it.
Ed, what do you? I know I rambled on it. What are your?
No, you're good. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm a little disappointed to hear that you didn't like the theme, because, Luis, let me tell you one thing real quick. How are you watching it?
I'm watching it on my 77-inch OLED.
Okay. Shit.
Yeah. Ed, suck this OLED, bitch. Like, let's.
are you watching on your phone?
I got 77 inches in this bitch.
You see that old thing back there?
You know, that was.
But, you know,
free TV,
like, I'll skip through a fucking intro, but every time that intro comes on, I am tuned in, I think. Stop shaking your head. Can I just get some fucking words out?
Sorry.
What kind of American are you, Miguel?
I just think that.
What kind of mutant are you?
I think that they took everything that made the original series so good and have just only, you know, expanded on it. I think that the opening intro is, I wouldn't say embellished, but it's more, it's just like, it's tuned up.
It feels soulless compared to the first one.
I disagree. I think
that guitar wail.
Excitement. It is there though. I feel like, oh, I mean, man. And obviously now I'm questioning it, but
I'm building up a point you're making.
I'm listening.
Did you catch the change? Apparently, Jean Grey, her character design changes after three or four episodes.
Yeah.
In the intro, did you catch that when you were watching it?
Did I see that?
Because the clone gets revealed, so her like hair changes.
It's different. Yeah, gotcha.
Into the real Jean Grey.
So we might see some more. I just think the animation is really good. It broadens. I think it does. Yeah, great. This has been a great little suck off section. But the I think like they've really like made the action, like really leaned into that action where the theme song starts like clicking on, you know, like every time, especially in the old series, it's like anytime they start fighting, you know, I feel like the fighting is obviously like a little cleaner now. But then so many brilliant, like kind of powerful moments, like at the end of episode two, Magneto has the council or the board or whatever, kind of like up in the atmosphere.
Oh, that was a good episode.
The imagery was incredible. Yeah, yeah. It just kind of reminded me of all of these storylines that I'm kind of like yearning for in live action. You know, like the X-Men franchise really petered out towards the end, like, and with kind of like a silent oomph. Yeah, like you had Dark Phoenix, and then right before that, Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. Two letdowns following, you know, Days of Future Past, which really worked for a lot of people. There's so much. It's just getting me excited about X-Men again. And rewatching the old series too has been really fun. And I mean, God, like every episode, something crazy is going on. Like all of a sudden, we're in like so many fucking characters, so many mutants.
That is like
otherworldly thing.
Yeah, churning and
it's
burning.
A lot to catch up, and it's very camp in that. Like everybody's wearing these outrageous outfits, and you got to remind yourself, like, it's still set in the 90s.
You know what, though?
Holy shit, like, this the places that it goes on a kid's show, you're just like, damn, how did we ever keep up with this? I told you guys, like, this would be like on Once in a Blue Moon, and I never knew what was going on.
100%.
It was cool to see the characters, but yeah, you didn't know what was going on in the grand scheme of things. Like, I don't remember Mr. Sinister, you know.
Yeah,
I missed like Lady Deathstrike, like that character. I love that kind of relationship with her and Wolverine. Like, bring that back, bring that to the movies. You know, I don't know. It's still, I'm
you can see
I'm
that with
it.
Morph when he's kind of in the new series. You see him. There's these cameos that he kind of brings up. Like Lady Deathstrike was a character that he brought up.
At one point.
That one episode where Angel shows up, I was like, whoa, Angel's here. And I had to tell myself later, oh, wait, that was a whole different person doing that. Like that was more. One of the things I said, I think after Multiverse of Madness is I feel like Marvel is going to take the X-Men cartoon and turn it live action for their X-Men. Yeah. You know what I mean? And we're seeing that with Wolverine and Deadpool versus Wolverine or whatever. Deadpool X Wolverine
New Empire.
You know what I mean? The fact that Disney is really going hard on this, like, we're gonna bring back X-Men 97 and make that a feature, like, I could see them being like, this is our X-Men of this universe
to me,
because they're talking about doing a movie, right?
Yeah
Okay. I assume
I made a joke about to Miguel. He was that's all.
I'm so mad. This is one of those shows I was not into it as a kid. I'm trying to watch it now. I thought I was going to be done with it before you guys. Y'all are already ahead of me. I'm going to keep watching. They're doing some interesting things.
Do we know how many episodes it's going to be?
I don't know. Ed, do we? Go ahead. Take it away.
I'm pulling it up. Sorry, I'm pulling it up.
X-Men 97, they're thinking about doing, they're trying to do Spider-Man, the old animated series. They're trying to bring, there's talk
now
to bring
that I would be into. Okay. Like I watched that Spider-Man Ooh. Show, when he got those 8 Spider-Man legs, you know what I mean? And he was like, oh, fuck. Oh yeah. I'm into it, dude. I'm into that.
The answer is 10, by the way, 10 episodes.
That's too many. It's too many.
Too many. We're at the
Can I tell you why? Can I tell you why? This is going to lead into what I've
you
been
don't
into.
Like it.
This is what I'm into right now. American Horror Story. Do you guys remember Ryan Murphy, the creator of this show? He also did like a spinoff, American Crime Story. Do you guys remember this?
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard about. Have you heard about this? OJ Simpson died. You guys.
I learned that through a meme. That's how
that
I found
out. Died?
Yes. Yeah.
Luis, I know you have Apple News. Okay. Like
I actually canceled my subscription with Apple News.
Please
use it.
Please.
I canceled my subscription. Please. It was on Instagram. It was a shot of the car being chased by the police.
Yeah.
With and like the meme was like, I hope the funeral procession's like this. And I'm like, wait, what funeral? That's how I learned.
Oh, man. I will say this. I am watching American Crime Story. I've seen this show before. I'm rewatching the OJ season. Mm-hmm. This is a season that is 10 episodes long. I think it could totally be done in like 8. You know what I mean? I was surprised at how long episode 2 was. Episode 2 was just the Bronco chase, which I understand is a big moment.
That's a big
but
moment.
It was like, I feel like we could have streamlined this a little bit. You
the
know
Bronco
what I mean?
Chase should have been its own episode though.
Well, no, it was. That's what I'm saying. But it was very long. It was like they really drew it out. And it was like, I get it. You know what I mean?
I feel like Ryan Murphy is a little bit long winded, no?
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, I don't know, Ed. I don't know. Tell me. How many Ryan Murphy shows have you seen, Ed?
I've watched maybe 1 or 2 American Horror Stories. It's not my bag. I have watched all of the American Crime Stories.
Which one's your fave?
Ooh,
the gay one.
I did the Versace one. Is that what you're talking about?
Sorry, I don't know why I said that. I'm so sorry.
I was gonna say I've really enjoyed the Bill Clinton one.
Can I tell you, Ed? I just recently rewatched Children of Men, and I was like, Clive Owen is great. I really want to rewatch that Bill Clinton season.
Oh,
he's so good. I've seen him.
Oh, okay.
He's really good in that one.
Yeah. Clive Owen, man, underrated, but I enjoyed that one just because of the Bill Clinton, Beanie Feldstein was really good, and Sarah Paulson was really good.
Sarah Paulson, by the way, is really good in the OJ season as well. Like, really, honestly, Sarah Paulson just is good every time she shows up.
Basically.
But she had a couple of scenes in the first 2 episodes that I was like, she goes from like, I don't know who OJ Simpson is to like, I want him buried under the jail. And that shift from that in 2 episodes is phenomenal. Okay. She's amazing. This is one of those, like, it happened to work, man. I remember watching this season. Like, I don't remember, Luis, you're a little bit older than us. You remember the OJ?
Jesus.
I don't remember OJ.
You don't remember the OJ thing? And me either, is what I was trying to say. And when watching this season the first time a few years back, I was like, this is helpful. You know, it's a little like dramatized, fictionalized or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you have to like take it with a little bit of grain of salt. But it was kind of like reliving that moment. And I guess they do that pretty well. I'm only 3. I've just started episode 3 on the rewatch, but I gotta say, man, this has been a lot of fun, and that's very topical. So if you haven't seen it yet, get into it. The big thing, Cuba Gooding Jr. plays OJ Simpson, and with respect, just does not look like OJ Simpson at all. It is like, man, I don't buy you as this character, but I appreciate the emotional journey he takes us on. So get into it. Who wrote "What the Hell" in this notes? Who was that?
I thought that was Ed. No, I thought that was you.
I think it was you, Ed. We'll never know.
Okay, so you guys have watched about a million things.
Yeah.
So I'll let you guys. Oh, actually, can I just real quick, Luis, it seems like you have a prank show topic you want to talk about. Can I just real quick shout out? I just listened to the new episode of This American Life. You guys listen to that podcast?
I know of it, but I don't listen to it.
No. Ira Glass. They did a re-air from 2016 where they did kind of like a deep dive into a few different things. But one of them was O.J. Simpson in like the early 2000s apparently tried to do like a prank show, like Punked. And they did like a deep dive into that experience, talking to like different actors on that show and everything. And I thought it was a very interesting like look into not only how OJ conducted himself after that whole debacle, but how everyone just kind of reacted to him in that moment. So if you listen, if you're a fan of podcasts and you're already listening to This American Life, listen to the new episode. It was a good OJ Simpson prank show episode. So
nice.
Bop, bop.
Yeah. So on my list, you're talking about prank shows. I watched this show called The Magic Prank Show. It's on Netflix. I know I have a couple magician friends here in LA, and one of them actually produced and was a little bit guest starred in the show, but he produced it. And I watched the show, at 6 episodes. And let me tell you, my jaw dropped so many times watching the show. What is this show? The show is a bunch of magicians pull elaborate pranks on unsuspecting targets to help people get payback. So there's an episode with like siblings. There's an episode with couples. There's an episode of all these like justice. There's different situations that they try to pull clever magic tricks. So, you know, if you do a magic trick with a magician, everyone's like, oh, it's cool, I get it. But if you pull it and you don't realize you're a magician, it's, you know, daunting. Highly recommend it. It's short. Once they get through the first part of the episode where they kind of explain the premise and we just jump right into the magic, like by episode 2, you're already kind of like having a good time. I am just like,
do they tell you how they do it?
No, for the most part, no. And it's, in fact, sometimes when they're letting in, when they're helping a sibling, like pull the magic trick on somebody else, they'll like bleep out what they're saying. You know, you'll see like kind of B-roll of them kind of showing, but it'll be bleeped out. For the most part, they maybe show how they do it once or twice. But they pull off a lot of tricks, and it's very impressive. So if you are kind of into magic, I would check out this show. It's very fun, and I dig it. So I just wanted to
promote. You said that's on Netflix?
Yeah. Oh.
Cool.
Yeah, get through the exposition, and then it's a fun time.
Ed, if you're not on Netflix, maybe like me, you're hopping on YouTube and you're watching some pretty fun videos.
No, I'm on Netflix. Wait, what?
I just wanted the listeners to know.
I thought you denying him was the bit. I thought this has become your bit to deny it. But no, you really didn't know.
The way I want to set myself on fucking fire, okay?
What? Sorry. Do it again.
You know, this great Netflix show, I don't know about you, Ed, but sometimes like I'm hopping between apps on my smart TV. I'm on Netflix. One of the other apps, I'm on YouTube a lot. I've seen a lot of really great clips on YouTube. Some really great, like, hot clips.
Oh, okay. Well, the funny thing about that is... yeah. Okay. So I've been watching... you know, not even in the order, but whatever. You know what? Fuck it. I kept hearing about this Conan O'Brien. I don't watch Hot Ones. Is that what you're talking about, Miguel?
Yes, we're talking about Hot Ones.
They have Hot Ones on Hulu, you son of a bitch.
Is that where you watch Hot Ones?
Don't tell me you watched it on Hulu.
Guys, I don't watch Hot Ones, but I did seek out this one episode.
On Hulu?
I did, but it's not on Hulu yet, so I watched it on YouTube.
So you watched it on YouTube. You watched it on YouTube, right?
Yeah, but I wasn't thinking.
I'm about to log off.
I watched this on YouTube. God damn. And do you guys watch Hot Ones?
So you watched it with ads?
No.
You have YouTube Premium?
No. I don't remember any ads popping up.
He's got a blocker.
Okay. All right. We'll talk about it later.
I know Miguel's a big Hot Ones fan, and I've watched a couple.
I mean, I've always assumed, like, at some point, it just gets uncomfortable.
Gail Shepard being into Hot Ones.
This episode, though, like, not only do I watch Hot Ones on somewhat regularity, I love Conan O'Brien. He is maybe my second favorite, and that's really close to number one, to be honest. Second favorite late night host ever. Okay. My favorite is David Letterman. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. No. What if I said Jimmy Fallon?
I was waiting for him.
No.
That was a good impression. That was
Thank you. I worked on it. No, I saw this episode. I was ready to talk about it, to be honest. But I'm trying to give Ed the lead in so he can talk about it.
No, I just kept hearing about it. And like I said, I'm not like crazy about it. I feel like the host is a little bit awkward. And, you know, people are just eating hot sauce.
Ed, sometimes your bigotry shines. And you know what I mean? Bald people are people too, okay?
I said nothing.
We're not gonna talk negatively about Sean the God Evans, okay?
The king of
hosts, okay?
He asked some very interesting and forward questions while people are suffering under their hot sauce. But
he was not ready for
Conan O'Brien. And your credit, like, Conan O'Brien was fucking great. Like,
because of all people, Conan is gonna he's done it for so long.
Yeah,
Conan is gonna show up and he's gonna be Conan. Mm-hmm. But he's also going to be Conan kind of respectfully within the boundaries of the show. You know what I mean? Like, he understood what Hot Ones was and he took it to that limit. But I don't think Conan was ever like, you know what I mean?
Taking over the show sucks.
Yeah. No, he knew how to play.
He gave them a unique episode. You know, instead of people quietly suffering, he just did that Conan thing, you know what I mean?
I gotta watch this now.
You know, you've got like these pretty people who are like melting under the tent, but like he's just like he's guzzling down like the hottest bottles. He's like blacking out from it.
The way that Steve-O from Jackass was when he came on Hot Ones, you know what I mean? Steve-O opened his eyelids and hot sauce in his eyes, but Conan was like, I'm gonna fucking eat the wings. But he committed to a bit, and that was like what Conan does.
Yeah, He was putting all the used bones in his pocket, and
he had a gag, right? Like another actor would come in. Like Conan knows how to kind of own a show, but never does more than what is either expected or deserved. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I love Conan O'Brien, okay? I will talk about this for hours. I thought this was a great episode.
It was a lot of fun.
And we're not going to sit here and act like, we're just discovering Sean Evans. Sean Evans is on Hot Ones for a reason. Like, he is one of the greatest hosts ever because he understands, like, on paper, who the guest is. He understands what questions to ask. He asks like a question that goes like kind of like three or four syllables too far. You're like, wow, you're still talking. But if you catch up to him, all of a sudden he's asking like a super well-rounded question.
He's very astute, like you say, to the person he's interviewing. Like, I appreciate that. It's just very, it's almost just, I don't know. I guess maybe because his questions are so specific and elaborate that it just
You're eating the hottest wing ever, right?
Yeah, exactly. And he just has this kind of like psychotic neutral smile on his face the whole time.
Sean Evans 100% has killed a person. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. So, and sparked joy in his eyes. Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah. And it's But
You used to live 20 minutes ago. Now, before that happened, tell me.
How would you like your remains displayed?
He's like, one of my biggest idols is Jeffrey Dahmer, you know? I didn't mean to get so heated about Hot Ones. But this is...
I didn't know you were... Yeah, kind of... So I had like a better like feed into both of those 2 points. Like, I was going to talk about like good TV this week was Conan O'Brien on Hot Ones and then Ryan Gosling on SNL. Because the bad bit of TV I watched was the regime.
The Trump trial. Oh.
Is that being televised? The regime, that Kate Winslet Max show.
You spoke highly of it first episode.
I was trying to get into it, and I was enjoying Kate Winslet, if anything. And like, it kind of teeters and sputters here and there, but it's never really funny enough. It's never really serious enough. Mm. It's not like all the points it's trying to make are kind of like half-assed. And as much as Kate Winslet tries, it's just kind of like a ho-hum experience. Unfortunately, it doesn't really land on whatever it's trying to tell. You know, it's very broad strokes on maybe kind of bigger political themes happening today. But yeah, it was just fine. It wasn't anything spectacular. You could tell they were trying to be something more, but it just never, like I said, it never landed. You had a really good cast on it too. It just didn't work out. There was like a nice welcome cameo from Hugh Grant about midway through it. But yeah, it just kind of never really went anywhere worthwhile. And you kind of saw what was coming for the most part. Mm. So a little underwhelming.
Did the season end already?
It's over. And I don't.
Okay.
I would be very surprised if they. Yeah, I just don't waste your time with it. It's like, if you want to watch like a, you know, like a montage of Kate Winslet in this show, you know, clips from it, that's fine. But overall,
you watched Mayor of Easttown on HBO, right?
Yeah, yeah. Was that greatly better compared to that? Yeah.
Okay.
This is nowhere near that.
Did you watch Mayor of Easttown?
Yeah.
Did you watch Mayor of Easttown?
I've seen one episode.
You should watch the show, to be honest. I know, it's pretty good.
I mean, there's so much to keep up with, but yeah, really this is not one that you want to keep up with.
Great.
Long story
good
short.
To know.
Yeah.
A lot of
content. Can I tell you like a show that I want to keep up with, but it's not like a typical TV movie drama. It's more of like a stage dynamic.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, like Luis, do you keep up with WrestleMania?
All right, guys. We're going to talk about WrestleMania right now. Okay.
Wrestling.
I used to be really into the Attitude Era during WWF.
Let's fucking go.
D-Generation X, Triple H, The Rock, Kane, Undertaker, all that jazz. We're talking 98 to 2001, that type of era. I was in it. I was hooked. I bought the WWF soundtrack just to hear all the intro music. Wow. I was involved with it.
Wow.
And then I petered away. I stopped, you know, paying attention to it. And then, to my chagrin, I keep hearing how good it is and how, like, oh yeah, it's still involved and things are still happening. And I was like, oh wow, I didn't realize that was the case. The Rock came back. The Rock came back, and his nemesis Triple H is now running WWE, as the head of creative, and McMahon is gone now, and so there is they're almost shifting into this new era, and they're calling it you welcome to the new era. So out of just curiosity, I heard about the Rock drama. Really what pulled me was Rock turned heel, if you guys know what that means.
Yeah.
He turned into a bad guy. That's what they call the bad guys, the heel. Uh-huh. And
rewatch,
so
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. All right.
Yeah, Ed.
Right. They'll give you like an education on
and so I
terms.
Was curious about it.
Hollywood Rock.
It was a 2-day event, and I got hooked back into it a little bit, you know. I saw The Rock fight again for a few times, and I got transported back to me being a kid.
I'll say this. I saw it on the internet where he was talking about, I don't remember the other guy's name, but he was talking about their fans on like, I don't remember what talk show. And he was just like calling him a candy ass, and he was like fucking, uh-huh, you know what I mean?
Cody Rhodes. Like really, he was talking Cody Rhodes.
That's right. I knew it was someone. But it was like he's like leaning into this character again.
Yeah.
And it was like, wait a second. We talk shit about The Rock in movies sometimes, but it's like he knew the assignment. You know what I mean?
He is, yeah. I think he took on, like, listen, he's not kind of in a great light right now with all the movies he did, and now he's people know that, so he's taking that and using it in wrestling as well. And he's also a board member in the new wrestling thing. Anyway, the WrestleMania was a couple weeks ago, and so I've just been like, okay, I guess I'll start kind of watching it
can
again.
Can I ask, like, in earnest?
Okay.
Can all three of us go see like a WrestleMania match? Dude, you know what I mean? Like, totally. I would be way down to go do that. Okay.
I would love to do that. I mean, I know it's super expensive in the front. We can get tickets in the back, but we should totally do just like a fun.
No, I want to be, yeah, just in the room, whatever. Yeah. Like, my nose can bleed. All right. I'm just like.
As an alternative, do you guys just want to go to like the nearest like City Wings or whatever and watch on like
a hang on a second, Ed. You're talking about going to a sports bar with wings and watching this? Now you've got my attention, okay?
Hot wings. You like hot wings, Miguel?
I love a trashy sports bar. Let's go.
Yeah, that's what I was doing in the early like 2010s, you know, 20 teens. I was doing the WrestleMania with our friend Ben Matthijs.
Okay,
like
yeah.
We would.
Ben
would,
was super into that.
He was, and he pulled me back into it for a little bit. And I would, because same to you, with you, Luis. I grew up in that same era with you know, well, like Kane was my favorite. Kane and
yeah,
the Undertaker and
Stone Cold.
Mankind. Mankind was a little older, right? Yeah, no.
He was around that time too. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I know because I watched a like the whole history of WWE on a car ride to work. This guy made a 3.5-hour documentary about WWE, like this YouTuber. Because I got hooked in, I was like, "Wait, what are those belts? What's his story? What's going on?"
3.5 hours to work the other day? Did you?
No. I broke it up So it was like a podcast at one point I would take 1:20 in to work, 1:30 out. So I was halfway through and I was able to like kind of get it done in 2 days situation.
Good for you. Proud of you.
Either way, all I'm saying, it's feeling like they're really setting this narrative of like, we are in a new era. McMahon is out. Triple H is in. Things are different. We are now setting the stage the way we want to do it. So if there was ever a time to jump back in, it seems like this is the time. But of course, you can like casually hear it on Twitter and watch all the big matches and stuff. But it seems like there's like a revolution happening. And I'm kind of like dipping my toe and just staying around it a little bit. I don't know.
No, I'm down. I'm going to go as soon as possible.
Yeah, that's it. Cool. I also rewatched Pineapple Express this weekend.
How was that? Holds up?
Why?
I have a great time. Because I wanted to watch something just warm and enjoyable. I had you know, the action sequences. Like, they have these really fun set pieces. They have a really fun fight scene in the apartment. Where they're like little kids fighting. You know what I mean? Yeah. And they're just like screaming these like phrases, you know?
My coworker just bought a Denali, a Yukon Denali recently.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking about that line in Pineapple Express where he's Danny McBride is like, "Oh, get in my Denali." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like this like small compact thing.
Yeah. He's great. There's the car chase is great. There's the shootout where like Seth Rogen's like flying. I just think they do a really good job of knowing what bits they need to play, and the line deliveries in this movie just cracks me up on some of these, you know, lines. I don't know. It was a good time, and I forgot that Huey Lewis did a personalized song for this. Huey Lewis is known for that Back to the Future song, "Gonna Get Back in Time." You know that song, Ed? Okay, well, whatever. Maybe other people know that song from Back to the Future. It's a very famous person, Huey Lewis. They were able to get Huey Lewis to do a Pineapple Express song, and I thought that was cool. Pineapple Express.
That's the episode, you guys. What, we did it. 102? We did 2 plus 100? All right.
Tune in next week, which will be April 26th. where we'll talk about, well, you gotta tune in. My name is Luis Gonzalez, and with me's been
Miguel Sanchez.
What was that? Ed Bull.
Ed Bull.
And until next
it's
time.
Too late. Oh, I gotta stop recording.
Okay, next time, later, Gators. Bye bye.